Okay, I've got 4 o'clock, so I'm going to get started. I'm Joni Julian, and I'm going to talk about IPv6 troubleshooting. First, a little bit of background on me. I have worked in the networking group at UNC Chapel Hill for the past, I think it's 15 years now. Might be up to 16 or 17, but then that gets embarrassing. So we'll say I've worked there for the past 15 years. My actual specialty there is network management, doing the SNMP. But of course, we also have to think about the basics. How are we connected? Can we connect as many devices as we have? And certainly at UNC, we have 3 Class B networks, a handful of Class C networks, and the answer is no. We have 95% address space utilization, so yes. The correct answer to do we have enough addresses to go around is no, we do not. So what do you need when you don't have enough IPv4 addresses to go around? You need your things to work with IPv6. So this poster I particularly liked. Someone photoshopped in VintSurf. I want you to use IPv6. VintSurf has an excellent talk you can find on YouTube easily where he talks about the Internet of Things and wanting sensors for this, that, and the other in his wine cellar and being able to address those sensors individually and remotely. And clearly for address usage like that, this can only be done with IPv6. Oh, the other thing I know about me, I'm sorry, I've started off way too fast. I like to be interrupted when I have slides. I like to get lost in the weeds. Please ask me questions. I'm not very good at scanning and looking for hands that are up, so unfortunately I'm going to have to ask you not to be polite. Interrupt me. Say something. I love to be interrupted. I love to get lost in the weeds because I'll go off on your question. It'll be so much more fun. And then I can have that moment of, now, what was I talking about? And I can turn around and go, oh, that's what I was talking about. When I have slides, please interrupt me. If I don't have slides and we're talking, we'll never end up on what I started on. And as long as that's okay, you're warned. People will ask me, what is IPv6? It's just another way to address our network-connected things. But there's this nice poster, an infographic, if you want to look at it. This is a clickable link. I believe these will be made available. If they're not, at the end, I'll give you a link. It's flyingpenguintech.org, and you can go through there and find the link to this. We will make it available. So again, sticking with the basics, before I start talking about how do we troubleshoot it, what are our IPv6 basics? Well, you get a 128-bit address instead of the 32-bit address of IPv4. Well, you got that many bits, the whole dotted quad notation, yeah, we'd have to have 4 of those. That's going to get really long. So we represent it as 8 hexadecimal fields, and instead of separating with dots, we separate with colons. And if you have a long string of zeros in there, hint, you'd like a long string of zeros in there, you put in a double colon. There are rules, there are tools to make this easy so you don't have to think about it. The best of those tools, absolute, hands down, best, you want to use this, is called DNS. This is true. There's no broadcast, just different kinds of multicast. We will hit this theme again. The layer 2 multicast and the link local multicast work really well. And again, there's always unicast, direct one-to-one communication. There's no private addresses, so the RFC 1918 private address space that has been used, abused, and should almost be killed for the way it's being used for NAT. By the way, at work, one of our swear words is, oh, they're doubly NATed. And that's one of the deadly swear words. So, yes, private address space was a little bit abused here. There's no private address space in IPv6, but you have link local addresses, that can't leave the local area network. You have addresses with a very low time to live, although in IPv6 they didn't call it time to live because there is no time associated with this. It's called a hop count. But you have a link local address that can't go very far. And they also have unique local addresses. When people said, no, we actually have real use cases for that private address space. So they came up with the unique local. Yes?
About private address spaces, when I first started using, unsuccessfully tried for years and years, but when I finally got connected, I was looking for private address spaces in NAT.
Yes.
And it took about 2 weeks of actually using IPv6 before I realized I don't want NAT.
Yes, thank you. Listen to this man.
I realized that NAT breaks stuff, yeah.
Yes.
But there are a lot of people who still don't understand that NAT brings headaches of its own.
Huge headaches. Mostly in the area of, guess what, troubleshooting. The seminal paper on this is Salzer, Clark, and Reed, the end-to-end argument, where if you don't have publicly addressable on either end, this breaks certain assumptions that they had when designing the internet. This is why NAT is bad, actually.
Yeah, I'd like to have that reference, actually.
Okay. Salzer, Clark, and Reed. And it's actually got a kind of long title, but it's end-to-end is in there, and I always refer to that as the end-to-end argument.
Yes. Just related to what you said, a lot of network administrators confuse NAT and firewalls.
Yes, the people who think NAT gives them security. And I'd like to have a fun little talk with them about just how good security through obscurity is. Yeah. I'm glad to be in front of a friendly audience that gets that, because you can really get me going on this.
I guess this is premature, but it brings up one of my major concerns is without a public address space, what happens if...
Well, you don't have to use the public address space. Use link local. Use the unique local address.
So when, let's just say, denial of service attacks, it's a flat address space, so your, coffee pot, for whatever reason, are there technologies to still have control locally and shield from?
You can. For instance, what I have set up on my home network right now is I just have only these ports are open for IPv6 and only to these address ranges. So I open it up to, if I'm at work, I can do anything to reach my home network. If I'm at my mom's house, I can do anything to reach my home network. If I'm not on those address spaces, I'm gonna have to jump over to one of them to jump in.
MAC addresses and so are.
It's not looking at the MAC address. I'm saying these IPv6 ranges can only do the IPv6.
Is IPv6 more resilient to spoofing?
It's actually subject to the exact same problems. You've actually hit one of the themes I want to bring up in my talk. No, this is a perfect time for me to say, pay attention to this theme while I'm talking. I'm going to give you a little bit of background. Why am I giving a talk on IPv6 troubleshooting? The reason why is I was afraid to turn it on when my boss said, it's time now. And I'm like, eek, I don't know how to troubleshoot this. And if I have to turn it on my servers, I have to be able to support it. That was my fear. How do I support something completely new? That was my fear. I'm here to give you this talk to say, boy, I was way too scared about nothing. That's what I want to tell you. It is so similar in the major functional ways that what you know is portable, unless it has to do with the specifics of broadcast or RFC 1918. Yes, there are some differences. I will point to them as we go by. But from the get-go, if you have to turn it on this week, which is the deadline I was given, it's not that bad. All of your troubleshooting instincts transfer. You may as well do it now when it's not a panic, rather than, oh my goodness, we can't reach customers across the world. We have to have it yesterday. Turn it on now. And you have to rush. There were problems. It took a couple days to get this going. It's fine. We learned from them. I took copious notes from them, and we will hit them towards the end of this slide deck. So it's very similar. Don't be afraid of it. Everything you know is portable, both the good and the bad, unfortunately. So originally, IPv6 had no DHCP, just the automatic configuration, the SLAC addresses, stateless local address auto configuration. But then enough large enterprises complained and said, no, DHCP gave us a lot more than just addresses. You gotta let us have some. So they came up with DHCP v6.2. If you wanna see me get spitting mad, have me go into the details of using ISC DHCP v6 right now. I'll just give you the overview. It does not have feature parity with the v4 version. And I'm so frustrated that I can't make everything work. That will hopefully be smoothed out over time. So let's think about what DHCP does well, configuring your additional parameters like DNS and your WAN server. There are other ways to get this information for IPv6. We'll hit that. I'll train you. I teach a class every spring at UNC on network management, and I got all my classes perfectly trained on how to answer this question. We'll hit a slide on it. I'll get all of you guys trained too. And IP security, IPsec, is built in. That's actually where the protocol came from originally. Okay, so I've covered, this is what our address looks like. These are things, no broadcast, that we have to live with. What does our packet header look like? Version, traffic class. What if we like quality of service? By the way, this is another way to get me spitting mad. Ask me if I like quality of service. It usually makes everything far too slow, and I dislike latency more than anything else. If you are having packet loss, yes, quality of service is a good thing. If you don't have packet loss, please don't shoot yourself in the foot, the latency foot. Okay, enough of that diatribe. There's a flow label. So if you want to say, I want these flows to go in this way, say if you're doing some traffic engineering, the flow label will be great. Payload length, next header. Remember how I told you we renamed the TTL hop limit? There it is. And then huge addresses. Big source address, big destination address. So yeah, we get our flow labeling. This also makes the net flow records easier. One of the common things when you're looking at IPv6 is what version of this thing I'm already using do I need to have to get the IPv6 support? When it comes to NetFlow, you need NetFlow version 9, and what's sometimes called NetFlow version 10 is the IPfix standard. You get your payload length, blah, blah. And we have fewer fields in here than we do in the IPv4 packet header. When they developed IPv4, we really hadn't done much IP. So they went, what would be nice to have? And, you know, You get a room full of geeks together, and what would be nice to have? You get a lot of nice features. And then when it comes to how do we actually implement, most of them were never touched. IPv6 said, yes, that's nice. They're optional. And that made the header, well, except for the address size, makes the header more compact. So what are our IPv6 address scopes? Well, what's loopback? ::1. Your link local addresses, they have to stay on the local area network. At UNC, we use a lot of VLANs, virtual local area networks. Your link local address is confined to the VLAN if you have a VLAN environment. If you don't, it's confined to your local area network. So basically, find the router that says, this side is inside local area network, that side is outside wide area network. Find that router. Your link local addresses that start with FE80, they don't pass that router. They actually cannot be routed. So they look very much like RFC 1918 in the sense that they can't be routed on the public internet, but they're automatic. You don't do any configuration other than saying IPv6 on. And you get that address. Well, you get loopback and you get your link local. Originally, they started off with a site local, this FEC0 address, but then that was deprecated for the unique local addresses. And the unique local addresses all start with FD. Then there are the addresses you expect, like your IPv4 addresses, your global unicast. It's a number assigned from IANA. It's unique. There's a documentation range that you're supposed to use, 2001:DB8. And then we still have Anycast here, the one to nearest that routers participate in. So we have a whole bunch of address types. This leads to one of the trick questions, the thing that often freaks people out. You know, I turned on IPv6, I went to see if it's working, I, you know, show what's on that interface, and there's a whole bunch of addresses, what do I do? Well, that's fine. For every network card you have, you're gonna have its loopback, you're gonna have its FE80 link local address. If you're lucky, you're gonna have your global unicast address. Don't worry. This is the thing about IPv6 addresses. We got lots of them. And we're gonna use multiple on every single interface. Yes, sir?
You've already partially answered my question, which
is, woohoo!
What about multi-homed hosts?
Yep, multi-homing, no problem.
A link local address on each
and they can talk to each other, and yeah.
How does it know when some packet comes in FE80, which one of the networks that it's on that's?
Most of the auto, all of the auto-configured FE80 addresses that I've seen, and I'm going to hedge my bets and just say the ones that I've seen, use the SLAC, the stateless local automatic auto-configuration addresses. The SLAC address is EUI64. So let's think about it. Let's take the MAC address. That's 48 bits. Well, EUI64 is a unique 64-bit identifier. So what they did is they took the 48-bit MAC address. They flipped the first bit just to show they were tweaking it. That's actually part of the standard for working with MAC addresses. And then right in the middle, between the OUI and what makes it unique, they added FF:FE. And that bulks it out to 64 bits, and it makes it very visual. You can spot that right in the middle.
I've never understood why they tweaked it. I don't understand why they didn't just take the MAC address and put it there, maybe shuffling the bits. Why?
There's an RFC that says if you change your MAC address, you must flip the highest order bit. And because they were messing around with the MAC address, they decided those rules applied, and that's why they flip it. Yeah.
Okay, wow. That's sad. There's a bit in the MAC address for a site local MAC address versus a real global one. So that's the bit that you flip.
Okay. So that
deal
is special.
Yeah, now, so they could have said, our EUI 64, we're our own thing. We have nothing to do with MAC addresses, and they could have left it alone. But they decided, everybody knows we're building this off of MAC addresses, so let's actually follow the standard, which is actually fantastic. Okay. Just a little annoying because you're doing mental math and flipping it around. I usually just take these and drop them in a calculator and let it spit it out at me.
If you're using privacy extensions,
You're asking about privacy extensions. Do you want me to answer privacy extensions on link local addresses? I have only seen Windows do that, and it causes me to scratch my head and mutter nasty words under my breath.
So I'm not missing anything.
No, it makes no sense, because there are so many things you can do on the local area network to get somebody's MAC address. Why are we using the privacy extensions? It's more than odd. It's fairly, let me sanitize this. It's a fairly contrary thing to do. Yes. I accept stupid as a good synonym.
Would that have anything to do with MAC address?
Well, they don't do the FFFE in the middle. They make it clear they're not using the MAC address for this, but why are we obfuscating something we can get through other means? I mean, why do we have to obfuscate the link local address? Or more interested in privacy for the wrong reasons. Yes, like I said, it causes me to mutter under my breath unkind words. Okay, so we've covered this slide. separate slide to talk about IPv6 multicast addresses. Well, the nice thing is they all start with FF. So you see the FF and you go, aha, you're doing multicast. And again with the scopes, remember how we talked about our loopback, our link local, our site local? We do the same thing with IPv6 multicast. So we do interface local. If you want to just ping, make sure the V6 is working. But particularly in the multi-homed instance you were talking about, you might want to localhost, but say you've got the quad port NIC. You might want to say, are all y'all talking? You can ping interface local all nodes. Link local all nodes is a really interesting one. I had someone speak to a friend. Actually, I'll just do a full disclosure right now. I came here with a friend of mine, Kevin Otte. If you ask me a really tricky IPv6 question and I have to say, I need to get back to you, it will be, but if you want the answer now, go ask him. So full disclosure, I have done this. I know quite a bit about it, but I know people who know more about it than I do, and they're here with me. So he was asked one time, I've got a Raspberry Pi. I turned on IPv6 on it. How do I know what its IPv6 address is? And actually everybody kind of went, oh, yeah. How do you know that? He didn't have console on it. He had a little headless out sensor. How do I find out what that V6 address was? And Kevin said, unplug it. Ping link local all nodes. Just see what you got. This is your baseline. Plug it in. Do it again. The new address is your Raspberry Pi. Solved. So there are nice little tricks here. So instead of having to run something like ARPWatch to see who's out there or pinging your subnet, boom, we got it. Ping link local all nodes. You got everybody on your local area network running IPv6. We can also do this for all routers. This is what I was saying I train my students to do. You know, how do we configure NTP? Well, on my DHCP clients for IPv4, I set it in DHCP. I tell the users what their NTP server is. I tried to set the exact same option, you know, looked at the syntax, set it on DHCP v6, boom. Crashed the DHCP v6 server, went, oh, didn't really want the server not to start. I guess I'll take that line out. And I was getting very frustrated. I had that beating my head against the wall feeling. When you get that feeling, if you're trying to tweak something in IPv6, just remember, there might be a multicast group for that. As you can tell from the color, that's actually a clickable link. There's a Wikipedia page of well-known MAC addresses. And when we were first bringing up IPv6, the way I managed to look very smart and on the ball to all of my coworkers was keeping that web page up. And someone would say, well, how do I set NTP? And I sort of like, oh, that's this multicast group. Oh, that's this multicast group. And everybody thought I was a genius. And as we all know, the true secret was Wikipedia here. So what I train my students, if you're not sure, if it doesn't work the same way it used to work in IPv4, guess that there's a multicast group for that. Why have I spent, yes?
On the last slide, just got a question about the addresses. Kind of like in IPv4, the loopback, if once you set a /8, so you can use any address in there, is FF00 :11 the same for your trace local all nodes? Or is it just that address? Not that really.
Well, you can do your ::1 loopback address, if you just want to do that test where nothing actually has to go out on the wire and come back, the literal loopback, or yeah, your interface local all nodes, that would be like the quad NIC example. That's the, it might go out on the wire, but it's not as high as link local. It is, what's this interface doing?
Okay,
I love the questions. I talk about multicast differently coming on. My best recommendation for V6 multicast is Wikipedia.
Got it.
I mean, that's what I hit as a reference. And if you can pull that up quickly enough, you can answer questions very quickly, look very smart, and learn it 5 seconds before it comes out of your mouth.
How does it work? Is it like you just send a request out to an IP address, and then you get an answer back?
Because these multicast addresses, they don't go across the global internet, these ones that we're looking at. They're very restricted. So there is no way in DHCP v6 to set the default gateway. This completely creeps me out for many reasons. But what you do is there's a multicast group where you say, hi, link local, all routers. Who's my gateway? What's the size of my subnet? How do I configure myself? There's a multicast group where you ask that question. So the interface comes up, I've got v6, I need to know my default route. Hello, who's my router? There's a multicast group for that.
Yeah, okay, I know what I wanted to ask is,
okay,
who is it that answers the multicast?
The router. Okay. The router comes back and says, I'm your router, here's your information.
So then, how does the router know what DNS server and what NTP server?
Well, there's a multicast group for DNS. There's a multicast group for NTP. You ask the router multicast, the find out your router multicast address to find out your router. You go look it up on Wikipedia. You ask the find your NTP server address to find out your NTP server. There are, unfortunately, multiple competing standards for multicast DNS, so you follow whichever standard your operating system has implemented.
Got it.
Yes, sir.
I
have not yet tested that, but all of my NTP servers are pretty much going to be on a different VLAN from my users. So I hope I've got some way to say, you will go join this everywhere. You know, just like there's the IP helper addresses, I have one DHCP server for a campus of 50,000 users. By saying IP helper address on all of the VLANs, all of the DHCP traffic goes to this one server that never breaks a sweat, is an old hand-me-down, in fact. Hopefully I can do the same thing with NTP, because there are ways to, when you're doing the v6 configuration, you say, we have these multicast relay addresses. So that's why I only have one DHCP v6 server that's in a VLAN where I don't do DHCP v6. So it doesn't serve DHCP to its own VLAN, just to the others. And there I have my multicast relay agent as the analog to IP helper address. So there are ways, you just need to learn to basically ask the question. I have not yet tested the NTP one. I wish I had, though. Yes, sir.
So when you're configuring DNS and you edit the resolve.conf file,
What I did for my name servers, because I told you the little story, Ayanna runs out of IPv4 addresses. My boss says, okay, go turn on IPv6. And I had my eek moment. That was immediately followed by my boss saying, and you will turn it on the name servers first. And I'm sort of like, oh, gee, thanks. Just my most used service, you know, the most visible thing I've got. And you want me to start there? Really? You sure? Because this does not exactly sound like a good idea to me. Turns out I was way too scared. What I did to turn it on, nothing needed to go in resolve.conf. I put nothing in there. Depending on which multicast DNS, you can put that in there. There is a multicast group for it. All I did on the server side, though, was there's the listen on directive, and then you put what v4 addresses you want to listen on. Listen on v6, and I just put in any. Very similarly, I haven't had to do any tweaking of resolve.conf on any of my machines because they just pick it up. They know whatever DNS they're using, and they do it. For the machines that do DHCP v6, I can send name servers. I just can't set time servers. Except what's in the test VLAN. Everything I'm running at work that's production is dual stack.
So as long as you're running dual stack, and you can use your
IPv4
address to query the DNS server.
Well, you can.
And it's going to answer.
But the I've had very good luck with getting my queries going out over v6. I've only actually looked at it on the DHCP v6 machines, and that's where I'm sending the v6 name servers. There is, I think it is a Windows bug. I will confess to, I don't have anything nice to say about Windows. I'm okay if someone else uses it, but please don't make me use it. The only thing I know how to do to Windows is how to make it blue screen. I don't even know how I do that. I just touch it and it blue screens. So I have a large blind spot there. Let's acknowledge. Large blind spot. It's called Windows. Sorry. It's just there. There are certain versions of Windows where they can't figure out what v6 name server to use without having v4 there. That's one of the things that breaks on a v6 only. And those are particularly interesting tests to run. I have a test VLAN for that, but I don't do any of that in production. Yes?
So for a Linux client system, if it's only using IPv6, how would it know what DNS server to use? Would it automatically use multicast, or would you have to update resolve.conf with the multicast?
I've not had to update it, so it clearly finds a multicast for it.
And there should be a DH.
That's Ubuntu and Red Hat do that. Okay. Yes, sir.
I haven't had to use multicast for your DNS with v6.
Intentionally. There's a lot going on under the covers. Just when you click turn on IPv6, things get turned on for you. What things depends on what operating system, what level.
Well, what I've specifically done is I have DHCP version 4.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gucked with it. And like you said, it wasn't originally there. So my IPv6 is manually configured. And I specifically added the IPv6 address of the DNS server.
Mm-hmm.
And added the IPv6 address of the IPv6 router.
Right, so you've done everything statically.
Yes.
So yes.
It's interesting to talk about doing it with.
Well, not only does that work, that also protects you from one of the flaws.
Sure.
That actually it's the switch vendors who are going to have to address this, right. And so far they haven't. The router advertisements, RA Guard, is the feature that everybody, well, I don't know if everybody wants it, but I know I want it really badly and enough so to say everybody wants this. The problem is if there's a multicast group for that, link local, all routers, what if you have a miscreant on your network? You know, anybody can listen to any multicast group. Anybody can answer. What if somebody comes back and says, I'm your router. Use this default route. And they're not benign.
So there are some people who,
yeah,
who have been detractors of IPv6, and this is one of the things I've heard from them.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the beauties of doing it manually.
Is there any other way to protect against that?
There's a secure implementation of router advertisements where we have to have an authentication step. There's no operating system support for it, and there's no router support for it.
You'd have to turn that on every client, even if there was support, though?
I'd have to be able to turn it on my routers first. My routers don't support it yet, and then all of my clients would have to support it. So my main thought is I'm going to look for that signature across the network. And if I see it, we've got a pretty fast cease and desist team. Yes, sir.
So when you're talking about routers, can you have like a default router and then also a router for a specific subnet? Like, okay, but could you still get that information within any cast?
Mm-hmm. It's remarkable stuff.
Do you have an impression yet as to how well, what is the practical subnet size limit on IP6 compared to IP4? Any performance impressions yet?
Well, I don't think I'm going to get that impression. We had to limit our VLAN sizes for IPv4 to be able to handle the broadcast rate. And what we learned the hard and painful way was our practical limit, broadcast, keep all the client machines up, not get too many complaints, was that we couldn't have more than about 3,000 to 5,000 nodes per VLAN. And then for router performance, you don't want to have more than about 4 IPv4 subnets. So we've already had to restrict ourselves a lot there. Subnet router VLAN trick with IPv6. You do not get multiple subnets. You are required to have one and only one subnet per VLAN. And they just recommend to do a /64. And given that that's twice as many bits as all of IPv4 address space, and we're actually going, I mean, we have to match our existing VLAN structure, clearly this is not a problem. So I don't think I personally am going to experience what is the practical size limit of an IPv6 VLAN.
Running into a network storm or tape problem where you're...
Where's the storm going to be? We don't get broadcast storms. I mean, you could try DOSing one of the better known multicast groups, but...
That's kind of where I'm
thinking
it is that a concern?
I haven't seen it yet, but I know in the...
situation where the entire, you know, there's been a update, 1,000 machines come online at once, mm-hmm. and by the clock, and your DHCP is...
Yeah, 50,000 users, I'm not at that size. We have had power outages and have all the machines come back. And yeah, the DHCP server will go from 2% load to 12%. I haven't been slammed by that. I know there are networks much larger than ours. So, but you need to find someone who deals with even bigger. Yeah, and we're a pretty big network, so that would not be the first thing I worry about. We have other things to worry about first. Why am I spending so much time on addresses? Well, and questions. The questions are fun. Answer that one. One of my coworkers, the first of my coworkers that we sent to actual official IPv6 training, she came back and said, as soon as you understand addressing, you're more than halfway there with IPv6. This is why I start with it. And then there's all that, is this a link local address? Is this a multicast address? If you don't remember that, there are great tools online. There's the Tavian website, there's one, v6decode.com. Easy to remember, drop your address in there. It'll tell you all sorts of things. You know, is this a multicast address? Is this a, you know, one of the globally unique unicast addresses? If it is it using the EUI64 encoding? If so, here's the MAC address. There are tools online to handle this. You can also, if you would rather have a command line tool, and my answer is, I would like to have all of them, please. IPv6 calc, it's very easy to build. And then down one layer, if you're into doing your packet decodes, the IPv6 ether type in hex is 86DD. So when there are places where we say we don't want to let the V6 run wild over here, you know, places where we have compliance and regulatory issues, we just block that ether type. We'd rather not, but if you have to, there's the ether type to look for. But I really recommend being able to recognize some addresses on site. This is particularly what I hammer into my coworkers' heads. I want you to know these on site, guys. So you don't have to call and ask me. :1, loopback. FE80, link local. If you see FFFE in the middle, that's the EUI64, and you can get their MAC address. 2002 is the 6-4 range. There are some older deprecated ones. And then if you see FF at the beginning, it's multicast. Those are the ones I expect my coworkers to be able to recognize on site. So if you're going to start somewhere, start here.
Oh, can you get on the slide for a second?
Sure. And again, these slides are at flyingpenguintech.org.
Okay, feel free to go on then.
Yeah, I want to get this information out. It's there, should be readily available, et cetera, et cetera. People will say, what's my IPv6 support? The one answer I remember off the top of my head, Windows XP, please don't. World of pain. Most operating systems newer than that, not a problem. The glitches are noted at University of Wisconsin at Madison. They have a great IPv6 section there. Oh man, this slide's too big. This green line looking here, this is latency incurred, additional latency incurred using IPv6 instead of IPv4. Notice how we even have some little drops where V6 performed better. Some drops from the baseline. These large purple ones are using Teredo. Probably don't want to use Teredo. This green, the one that you look at it, is the most stable, sometimes really good. That is using native IPv6. You're not using a tunnel broker, which is the light blue. You're not using Teredo, which is the purple. Unfortunately, I forgot what red and blue are. You want the native in there. So that's my slide. Someone, I believe at RIPE, did the research to pull this out. They've got a lot of really good research on this at RIPE. Some tricks about IPv6 performance. There's this whole notion of the RFC says we're supposed to prefer V6 if they're both available. This is how we're going to live in the dual stacked world. Prefer V6 when you can. Fall back to IPv4 if you have to. Well, because you have to figure out if you've got the V6 connectivity, there can be a timeout, and web pages can take longer to load. Internet Explorer is absolutely the worst of all, as it waits for all the content to arrive before it renders it, and yeah, I don't use that, so. How do you figure out what your address is? You can always use ifconfig, but on Linux, we're trying to recommend that you use ip address show. The ip command is one of those remarkably overloaded commands that does some of everything. It slices, it dices, it'll sell you Ginsu knives, and it'll fix your dishwasher. Really, read the man pages, but I recommend only reading the man pages if you have a task in mind. I go through it very quickly going, I'm looking for, there, I found it. Amazing what it does. On Windows, ipconfig or the NetShell interface IPv6 show address. And then I'm giving an example on one of my servers. I am also looking at the time. Again, these slides are available online. Oh, I can go to the next one. The many other addresses. When we brought up privacy extensions earlier, I meant to jump into this. People said, wait, if I'm always using my MAC address as part of my IPv6 address, every time I go to a Starbucks, I can be tracked. I went to Starbucks. We have a little grocery store called Weaver Street Market. They'll pick you up at Weaver Street. They'll, you know, I can be tracked with this. What are you doing to me with this IPv6? So they came up with something called privacy extensions, which is just you pick random numbers to fill out your subnet, make sure nobody else is using that. Then after 15 minutes, you decide to change to a new one, and another one, and another one. Depends on your connections. What I've noticed is when I compare my IP addresses to a NetStat is I will have some very long-running connections that hold on to like the first privacy extension address that I came up with, and then the others will have some good churn. Then I'll have something else running for a long time, and that address will get stuck. But I can look in NetStat and figure out why. Oh,
address,
yeah.
And the thought that maybe they'll want to talk to you with it later. And I think it keeps it for 60 minutes or something like that. The default,
it'll overload.
You can end up with 20, 30 addresses.
I'm always impressed at their ability to do it wrong. Just to make a complete detour, one of the things that gave us a lot of trouble, the first generation of Xbox comes on campus. Like I said, we have 50,000 users, around 26,000 students, half of those on campus. We got a fair number of first generation Xboxes on campus, right? Those things read the RFC on MAC addresses should be unique and decided, well, if they're unique, why don't I have more than one? And we were running about 600 MAC addresses per Xbox.
What the hell?
Yes. That's a complete detour. That's, but yes, it caused some management problems. Sorry, I didn't mean to turn into Microsoft bashing, but it's so easy. There's a FAQ entry on how to disable it in Windows. There's an entry on how to enable it in Linux. If you want it, it's there. Kind of like teaching everybody to say there's a multicast group for that, we have some corollaries. In IPv4, we call it ARP. In IPv6, we call it NDP, Neighbor Discovery Protocol. If we want our multicast to work, and clearly this is huge for IPv6, you want IGMP, Internet Group Membership Protocol. You actually want IGMP v3, the earlier versions. Please don't touch. In IPv6, it's called MLD, Multicast Listener Discovery. And it's just that, hey, what's going on? Who's in what multicast group? It's the magic behind the curtain that makes things work. There are others where you need to know the version level. Like I said, NetFlow version 9 gets you the v6 support. OSPF version 3. I think BGP, we did not have to change our version there, although that doesn't mean anything. Now we get to the meat of what I wanted to do. I hope I've convinced you there are so many similarities, you don't need to be afraid of it. But let's just look at it with the 7-layer model. Well, layer 1, it's still the physical layer. It really helps if you plug it in. Layer 2, well, there's the ARP command, ARP-A. Let me see everything in my ARP table. Well, there's actually an NDP-A. Let me see everything in my neighbor discovery protocol table. NDP is out of the box on the BSD variants. There is an analog to it, you know, run this IP fill in, it's IP neighbor show, but run the IP command and you'll get that. So it's not quite as simple as typing NDP-A. I've been known to alias it to that though. Layer 3, do we have our IP, whether it be V4 or V6 connectivity, ping, traceroute, if we want to look up, we use host. Well, there's ping 6, there's traceroute 6. Host is actually an interesting one. If you want to know the V6 record, there, you can actually, well, actually, when you want to know the A record or the quad A record, you just say host and the host name. If you only want the V6 record, you do host-T, quad A, whatever you're querying. This host minus 6 says, I want you to send the host query over IPv6. So host minus 6 says, do this over IPv6. You do not get to prefer and fail back to V4. Do it over V6. If you want the V6 record type, that's where you say host-T quad A. But most of the time, since I can type host www.unc.edu, and I get back both the A and the quad A records, this makes me happy. Netstat, there's no change. Although I'm going to give you the caveat, you may want to learn netstat-w, wide. Gives you wider fields to show the whole long address. IP tables, I do recommend host-based firewalls. Not a big fan of the hardware firewalls, but host-based, yes, because then I control it. There's IP6 tables. So everything else, they put the 6 at the end. Yay, IP tables, they put the 6 in the middle. It's just there. University of Wisconsin at Madison, again, I said they had fantastic documentation. They have a list of network troubleshooting tools broken out by platform, so it's got the whole long list. And at this point, I've run out of time. So if you see me, ask me questions. If you see a guy in a blue flight jacket next to me, he knows even more than I do. Any more last minute questions before I let you go?
You didn't say anything about it.
Yeah, it was so easy to turn on.
It's two different topologies. IPv4 topology and IPv6 topology. I mean, if UNC has native IPv6 connectivity, you're fine.
But it's defined per VLAN.
Well, sure, yeah.
So in that sense, it does match how I think about my network.
Yeah, you're thinking about them as one network, right?
Oh, yes.
Right, because operationally, it could be two different, I mean, the routing and stuff.
Actually, for us, it isn't, but yes, I can definitely see where that can come in.
You have native, right?
We have native.
I don't have native, I have a tunnel.
Well, we have native and we have a single ISP. So we have native, we send it up to MCNC, our service provider that does the educational and healthcare in North Carolina, and life is good. They take care of us. Yeah, that.
I have a tunnel in, so it's multiple topologies.
Wow, that does not sound like fun. But you remember this? I was going to say, there's a slide. Native is best.
My quick question is, what about firewalls for itty bitty networks? Where right now,
itty bitty firewalls give IPv6 carte blanche. Hopefully that terrifies you.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. Is for my
IP6 tables.
But when I plug in some little appliance, who knows?
Fear.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Fear.
Well, depends on how your security is, but yeah, you do need to worry about that.
What can I find these slides at?
FlyingPenguinTech.org. And multiple other places.